Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Puma Podcast.
You have to really watch how you talk about business. That's, you become your own obstacle. I think that's what happens. Creative, especially, it's yucky. It's embarrassing to put myself in the spotlight. It's so cringy to talk about myself. But that's not what business is. Business is about your community and your target market. So if you know why you exist as a business, it is gonna be never about you.
Hi, I'm Carl Javier, CEO of Puma Podcast, and you're listening to A Better Normal. On this podcast, we talk about creativity, entrepreneurship, and innovation, and how these intersect. In this episode, we're talking to Nina Terol and Candice Kimpo of Imaginable Impact. They are an inclusion studio, and they'll explain this and a lot more in this episode. Nina, how did you get to this point where you are now a founder?
That's an interesting journey because, as you pointed out, I started out as a communicator. Was really heavy into editorial work and all that. And I had actually worked with Candice back then, so mga 18 years ago. And we were collaborating on a lot of communications and editorial projects. And things diverged and things started to change in a big way for me when I decided to join government. It was a pivotal career change because at some point, I kind of became an activist. I was doing political blogging, etc. And then I got invited to join government and I realized, okay, if I want to change, you know, a system, might as well be part of that system I'm trying to change. So that led me into the world of community building, or I guess community organizing, social media and digital marketing. And I guess back then, it was the days of, you know, social media as a collaborative tool. Wala pang trolls noon. So I guess we got to experience the best of social media and the digital world at the time. But eventually then I realized that in this whole arsenal that I wanted to build, especially in terms of change making and innovation, government was just one part of that arsenal. So I went back into the corporate world and worked with a number of other corporations before discovering startups. And yon, when I discovered startups, wow, it was like, I was like a kid in a candy store or the kid in a gadget store. Na, I really wanted to dive more into that because I also saw na this was the way forward. If we wanted to do change at scale, we needed to do it through technology. We needed to support the people innovating and founding these things. So that's how I got into startup. Now, the quick answer then to how I became a founder was there were a number of battle scars. And I realized that you can't change things pa rin if you're not the person on top. So going back to the change-making side, there were certain pain points that I really wanted to address, and I realized I had to do it by starting a company and leading that company, right? So that's what led Candice and me to start thinking and talking about Imaginable Impact.
How about you, Candice?
I actually graduated with a business degree. I think this is like a small known fact among all my friends because you either met me supporting a rock band or watching a ton of gigs or writing and doing editorial work. But I was trained to be an entrepreneur, and I've only technically been employed twice. Once was right out of college because my friend invited me to join her company and I just wanted some work. I had no idea what I wanted to do. I just knew I wasn't going to do corporate. Eventually, I became a freelancer, a career freelancer, before deciding your life was a thing. So part of that had to do with having a baby, and I knew that I wanted to have control over my time. So I think I was always predestined to look at entrepreneurial way of life as something that was open to me. I just never thought about C-suite as a goal, the way that we probably think about it in the more traditional way. But I have to say, when I joined my second company and I saw, and that was like a tech company back in the late 90s, early 2000s. I'm sorry, hindi pa siya late 90s, early 2000s. I saw what it could mean to be part of a thing that was trying to do something big. And I was in the middle of all the action. So I probably filed that in the back of my head because I became a consultant for a lot of editorial and communication purposes for a long time. And down the line, I realized that communication, which is now, you know, being called storytelling in many ways, is really about talking about transformation and helping businesses reach their goals. So if you're a communicator in any organization, in any company, you're actually really close to the C-suite because what you're doing is translating a company mission or company goal into something tangible, whether you're selling or you're advocating or you're creating community. You're really, really close there. The big difference about biting the C-suite label, right, or becoming a founder is really taking responsibility. And maybe what happens is that I just got older. I run out of options. The only thing that's left to do is to really just make things happen on your own. And I've had enough time and I've had some multiple turning points really that made me realize that everything I believed in, social impact work, women empowerment, inclusion, diversity, all of these things is already what the world is looking for at the moment. And while we're not here to monetize it, we have to realize that the new way of business is really through social impact, inclusion, and just a general awareness of being intentional about your work. So somehow along the way, everything I've done through communications, even artist management, all of it, all the freelance work, all the consulting work, all the collaboration work, comes together for me to be able to co-found Imaginable Impact with Nina and put the business behind it so that we can create something that lasts longer than a project per project basis where we are dependent on another business's goals or another organization's ideas of what change might look like. So it's time, it's experience, it's a lot of hard-learned lessons for sure that brought us to this point.
I just want to reflect and say that a lot of this resonates with me as sort of a communicator na nabuhay sa racket and kind of I get with Nina na jumping around and trying to find things, and also with Candice that you hit a certain point and you're like, I think it's time that I did this much bigger thing. And I do think, like, for creative people like us, we're also resistant to it. Like, we want to not be the authority for a long time. Like, we do want to the autonomy of, like, the creative and not being part of the system. Like, those are parts of our narrative as well. But once you embrace it and then you see what kind of impact you can make, then it really changes. You can harness now all of these things because you've built up to it. For the benefit of the listeners, can you tell us a little bit about Imaginable Impact and what you're really working towards?
Imaginable Impact is what we call an inclusion studio. That means that as a studio, we have the power and the capacity and the agency, diba, to create our own programs and projects and platforms. So not necessarily just dependent now on another company's goals, etc. And what we're really aiming to do is, you know, co-create a world where women thrive, and specifically for women in business, and help them explore and unleash their leadership and their economic and wealth-generating opportunities.
So Imaginable Impact is really about embracing what it's like to lead like a girl. So it's something that we're seeing out loud right now. With a disclaimer, really, that we're not out to propose battle of the sexes kind of situation. But what does it mean to be a woman in leadership, a woman in entrepreneurship, where you can be fully who you are as a woman and all the demands, expectations, both of society and yourself, that comes with being a woman and still be in a position where you can lead a company or lead a startup without losing yourself. So in the process, we found out that even in our own journey about asking that question, like, Minya, what does it mean for you, right? To be a leader, what does it mean for me? It really showed that the conversations that we're also having with other women friends and contacts, they're also asking the same questions. And it's in community that we found out that we need to put something together, like Imaginable Impact, that can create a system, a platform that puts these sentiments together and then build, you know, a new way forward. I mean, the podcast name is perfect. We really are trying to do things differently. We think that there are many situations and scenarios where being a woman is difficult to, you know, it's difficult to be a woman leader because of how things work. And we're not here to say that we have to adjust the way, you know, we have to lean in. No, no, you have to really see what is the better way to do things. Actually, when you talk about the racket and even being artists, I think being in the startup world, if you're creative, this is rock and roll. You're kind of disrupting and dismantling structures here, except that you have to look at the bottom line this time and make your peace about revenue and making money and all of that. But this is what it is. It's challenging the system while being part of it at the same time. And for women, we need to take our place here and figure out what is the world we want to live in and how do we co-create it with everybody, men, women, everybody else.
Yeah, I think one, we can get very excited about the startup world, but also the startup world is very macho bro. Like there's a lot of very bro values that are reflected there. And I'm sure I am guilty whether I'm aware of it or not, but I've asked our executives to go to Imaginable Impact events, and I'm a believer. And actually, we do have an executive board that is not primarily men, which is sort of rare. So I'm a real believer in the diversity. And I know that there are studies out that show that if you have women in executive roles, then the performance of the company is better. Like it's it doesn't even have to be an argument. But I did want to ask, for you guys specifically, were there personal experiences, anchor points, like situations where you saw the path and you're like, this is why we need women in this role?
Absolutely. I mentioned earlier that for me, incepting Imaginable Impact was also a product of some battle scars. And that was having come from the startup world nga, where I saw the broness, full-on bro, right? Where I would see how it was so easy for male founders to pitch and raise money with even just a PowerPoint and nothing else. Yet, you see in pitch competitions or, you know, I've sat in pitch sessions and here we're female founders or female-led teams really already coming at a disadvantage. And then the questions that were being asked of females would be different. And then there were a lot of innuendo and jokes and all that that wouldn't leave the room, but you just knew na there was a different viewpoint of female founders. And dehado talaga. So that was one. I think another one was having been a female leader in that space, I really had to fight for, the position, had to fight for the pay raise. Parang why was everything always a fight? Why was everything always such a battle? And then I had to constantly prove myself to the point na ubus ka na. The way I describe it then was, I was a house raised to the ground and I was all ashes. And I told that to my boss and my team, then I have nothing left to give you. That cost to me and my personal wellness also showed me that there's got to be a better way of doing things. We cannot keep operating startups, diba? And burning people to the ground this way. So what is the better way forward? And the insight also is female leaders would at least keep an eye out for their team's well-being. Physical, mental health. And this was during the pandemic. So Diba? Could we have an organization that's run with more empathy and compassion and just, you know, a more nurturing spirit? So for me, those were really, really concrete points to all of this.
I'm sorry you had to go through all that, but I guess you are here now to improve the situation for other people.
Yes, they say, diba, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So we're still here.
Also, you're talking about pitching sessions just reminds me of, well, dudes and women in school, usually, like, at least in the high school I went to, the girls were the ones who did all the studying and sila yung mayos, and then guys kind of just rolled up and whatever, and then we kind of just get by because we're dudes. And I don't want to say, like, not all men work or whatever, but there's a clear sense I know of most of the women that I've worked with that they feel like they have to earn their spot in the room.
Yep.
And then for dudes, we just show up because
and you wing it.
There's already space for us. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm gonna say I'm guilty. And I'm gonna pass it on to Candice for her points here.
Yeah. I'm trying to see if I had like a direct like discrimination story, but I think I've been working really hard to avoid them, but not so much to my advantage, right? It really means when you avoid these places of conflict, and that's why I stayed as a consultant for so long, is that when you avoid it, is that you also can get the bigger work and the bigger projects and all of that, because you feel like you have to forego and compromise. So there's that. There's the opting out of being a big player because you'd rather not be in the room where you'd be discriminated against. Or I decided I'd be working like in more meaningful ways with social impact and inclusion, diversity, social entrepreneurship, these kinds of people. And what happens is that I find myself surrounded with like-minded women, some men, where it's safe. But as we decide to do imaginable impact, what was really critical to me was to listen to other women's experiences, because why are we opting out of the startup world just because the bros are there? What are we going to do about this? And the conversation is not just local. This is global. There are a lot of questions of what it would mean for women to step up or for the ecosystem to shift so that women can bring their talent, their perspectives, and their solutions to the world. And even that, and that became really exciting to me, if I can be part of the solution that bridges and unlocks women's potential to solve the problems, then it really bridges also to everything I've done before. Like I said, there's nothing left to do but to step up at this point. I'm really used to being in the shadows and in the sidelines and happy to be there. But it's either you complain or you do something about it. And I think in startup, luckily, in our first couple of months, we've been welcomed by very open-minded people who may not know the whole thing, who are open to us pointing out these things that we're observing, men and women willing to listen and say, okay, I see your point. Let's see how we can help you move forward with this mission of yours. But men being aware that they have privilege is huge. I think that's a huge step. I don't know if I would have heard this statement 5 years ago, honestly. So it's always really nice to hear men step up and say, hey, I don't know everything, or hey, I know I'm part of the problem. Tell us what to do, or do we step out of the way? How do we work together? And that's what we found out this year. And maybe what happens is that when women or just people in general decide to put themselves on the line, you attract people who want to work with you. So it stops becoming a gender issue because it's just an issue and it all helps us. So it's both looking at the numbers, looking at the situation and getting depressing, but then looking also at how other people are willing to shift things. Maybe because now we're in an older group, so we have parents as well who are looking at their children and what kind of world are we building for our daughters and our sons. Hopefully I raised a son who does his work in school activities as well and group works and not be that person who doesn't do things. I mean, I thought, that at the very least is what I can do to help move the conversation forward. And then now we amplify together, have these conversations in public.
It's very clear to me what the long-term vision is, right? What we're shooting for. And obviously, like, the most challenging things will be the immediate first challenges. Can you talk about what those initial challenges are? I'm wondering if has there been like that gender-based threat level pushback na, oh my God, it's women organizing. Ganyan. Like, what have the challenges been for you?
You know, first is, I think we are also, for women, ha, we are also held back by our own mindset, our own programming. So very often, the first challenge that we encounter is internal, or things that are really for us women to rethink and reframe for ourselves. Kasi, so in Imaginable Impact, we're seeing that there are some critical gaps that women entrepreneurs face, and that is confidence, competence, and capital, right? And the confidence, we can only go so far to build community or to share inspiring stories, but it'll have to be us doing the work. So even in the process of setting this up and owning the founder title, owning the C-suite title, we had to question and combat our own imposter syndrome. Diba? Like, I had to stop always trying to shrink and let others, diba, expand or let others take the stage, and always think of myself as, oh, you know, I'm not good enough yet, or I don't know this, or maybe some other expert knows this better, or maybe I need to go back to school and learn this, right? So stuff like that. So the whole mindset shift is a big part of it. And that's why it's important for us to really build a community of women who are open and vulnerable and willing to share the parts of the journey that are also messy. Because the thing also with the startup world, we've glorified the Forbes 30 under 30. I mean, everything is under 30, or the college dropouts and all that. And everything feels like an instant success story. But we never see the messy parts. Right. And it's when you encounter the messy parts, when you feel so overwhelmed. And yeah, and that's when imposter syndrome kicks you talaga and you feel like giving up. But when you're surrounded by other people who are going through the same thing and open about the challenges they're facing, and also open about, you know, let's explore this together, sharing solutions and sharing stories and just helping you reframe things, then you begin to shift the images and the stories you tell yourself. And that's one of the biggest hurdles. And then, you know, the other things kind of become easier because your perspective changes. What's possible for you also changes. You start to see role models, or you start to see what's possible when dati baka all you were seeing were the blinders and the challenges around you. So for me personally, and what we're seeing in that community, confidence and mindset, that's the first major hump that we usually have to overcome.
Just a quick follow-up to that. I was saying, oh, is it, you know, dudes pushing back on this whole idea? But actually, it's the fact that men have put up structures where women have a limited imagination. So it wasn't even that they needed to push back. It's like the whole system was already set up, mm-hmm. that it's something that you need to sort of build against. And I guess long-term, then the hope is women don't have that limited imagination, right?
Yeah. Like, or
once they see more women founders, once there's more women funders funding women founders, then that whole balance changes.
Yeah. Or just very quickly, right? The proverbial seat at the table. So if the table was built to just have one woman on it, then the mentality was women were going to scramble and fight and challenge each other for that one slot. But what if we can create more tables or different tables that were more diverse? And then if women can say, hey, salika, diba? Like, this table is open for you. Then we start to say, oh, okay, it's not just reserved for one other woman that's not me. I can actually participate.
I think it's important to remember that men did not consciously, I would hope, decide to put these structures up. Maybe, you know, if we count down to several decades back, but what's happening now is also just a result of many generational ways of thinking. And so the first step as a community or a culture is to really look at ourselves and take stock of what we have and what barriers exist for anybody who's not in the mainstream, right? Or the main hero of the current narrative. And to be honest, it's not just a women issue. It's any marginalized issue. So this is why we go back to being an inclusion studio, because as we advocate for women, as we create programs to uplift women's competence and confidence and capital pathways, we're also looking at what inclusion looks like, because what works for women, if we help them, we actually are helping others. Or the same way, if we are looking at what it means to be inclusive of all kinds of marginalized people, then it also helps women. That's really what happens when you are thinking from that perspective, right? The feminist label is so touchy and so hot, but really all that we're trying to say, right, is to just challenge the pervading masculine testosterone stereotype and the structures that exist. It's not so much about flipping it. You know, hot take, I'm not super sold on the Barbie story. I don't believe in flipping this, because that means somebody else is under the naman. So it's not that. How can we make things equitable? So as we build imaginable impact, as we look at, especially under the founder banner, where we really build the founders, the women founders, way forward to scaling and growing their businesses, we're really looking at, one, not just challenging the structures that exist, but looking at all the alternative models that are open. We've had several discussions offline and with other mutual friends about, do we really need to grow 10x? What if I don't want to become a unicorn? What if I don't want to exit? They should all be valid in the startup world, because no one should tell you how to run your business but you. But if you're a woman trying to prove yourself, your first instinct is to follow the playbook. But who says that that's the only playbook? Why don't we write new playbooks, multiple playbooks? So as we do that for women, we're also seeing that this is also happening in other communities, right? Artists, creatives, social impact entrepreneurs. As long as you're trying to find another way to build a business and a life, then I'm happy to have this conversation. It's just that our focus are women, because this is our lived story, our lived experience, and we're our own case studies at this point.
I think the interesting thing here, and I've had these, why does it have to be 10x when there could be other things? But it's this sense of a scarcity mentality before. And what I like from what you're planning and what you're building and what you're creating is, it doesn't take from the current pie. You're trying to build a bigger pie. So like, from what I understand, like you're bringing in women funders and connecting them to women founders. And it doesn't take away from other projects. It just expands what is available, right?
Yeah. And don't forget, it's not that we're saying let's not do 10x. If you're a woman founder and you want a 10x, you want to be the next and first Filipina unicorn, my God, we're here to help you. Let's figure out a way forward for you. All we're saying is to challenge everything that's preventing you from being the person that you want to be. And as a woman, we really do assume multiple roles. If being a 10x startup founder is going to prevent you from being wife, mother, sister, daughter, friend, that, you know, all of these things, then you're going to have to figure out a way that works for you. I think what happens is that we were also sold on the one way to do startup. Mm-hmm. And it's not just us, it's the whole world, right? We're looking at what's happening right now in Silicon Valley and around the world, what's happening to so-called unicorns and VCs. And it's not a pretty picture. It's really time for change.
Where I come in on that is, we're not saying don't do 10x, but if 10x is the goal, then for me, that's a weird goal. Like, your goal should be do something important, and then maybe the impact of that important thing will 10x. Hindi yung 10x itself as the important thing.
No, it's language, right? And it's framing. Because if that's the framing for that particular business, my question to that founder is, do you know how to get there? Your why is your personal driving force, but do you know how to get from your why to 10x? Because sometimes that's where we come in. We can help you with the competence and the confidence and all these things. How you get there, that's your hard work. But if your goal is to build a legacy business, right? Or all these other things, same thing, whatever is your driving force, do you know how to get to your goal? So there's, before the competence and the confidence really is clarity, there's a lot of inner work to be done. So if whatever it is that drives you, if for you it's meaningful work that will bring profit, it's symbiotic, right? Mm-hmm. But you still have to build a business, because if meaningful work lang and there's no profit, that's not a business. That's an advocate. Not even. You have to raise money for advocacy. It's a hobby. So that's not what we're doing. And I think our first task is to just make women, in our case, women, we have to say women because that's who we're serving, just realize that money represents the goals and aspirations, right? That you want to build. And maybe that's why we're speaking the same language. It's just, how do you frame it so that you can create the steps forward that will push you when, you know, the day is hard, the week is long, to move towards that particular point in time.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We've been talking about you guys being women founders, but how much does being a middle-aged founder influence or factor in? Or
no one middle-aged, but yeah. No, I'm 46. I'm happy to see it. I think it's an amazing, I love being this age. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would have been ready 10 years ago. Well, for two reasons. One is that the environment wasn't ready, I think, for a company like ours. I was exposed to startups, I would say 12 years ago, in the beginning, I think, of the Philippine startup scene. So I knew it. It was very exciting, but it was also very murky. If we came on board that early, I don't know if we would know what to do except to just build something out of passion, but not really purpose. So that's first is timing. Second guy is, my God, the life experiences. Mm-hmm. And the skills that we were able to accumulate, the relationships that we were able to build has really allowed us to become this 10-month-old company who've staged a forum, put together multiple little events, built a community. And it's not because we work from 10 months straight and I can promise the next company you work for 10 months, you'll get here. Being this age and having decades of experience has allowed us to build a company faster. We're building on our past work and our past lives in a way.
Yeah, and I'm equally proud. I'm 43. So yeah, we're in that sweet spot, I think, where there's still a long enough road ahead of us where there's still the potential to build something big. I mean, between Candace and myself, what, another good 15 years, for example, if we want to just keep doing this, that's a decent amount of time to build something that can really impact a lot of people and create. Oh, I'm super excited about the possibility of creating, you know, generational wealth, not for myself or for other people, you know, just dream bigger. And we have that runway still. But like she pointed out, we've already had 2 decades of work and relationships and credibility and trust behind us. And we're standing on the shoulders of a lot of this knowledge and a lot of our mentors and people who've opened doors for us. So it's a great age to be in. And I don't know where it was. I saw that the average age of a really successful founder is actually not the 30 under 30s, diba? It's 42. So I was like, okay, we're in the right spot. Kasi nga, even as I go through this journey, for example, of, you know, second-guessing, imposter syndrome, etc., I still know that there are a lot more things I know right now na I can remind myself, Hoy, or Candace reminds me, stop second-guessing yourself. Alam mo na yan, di ba? Or you can have high-level conversations with people and you're not gonna back down because you know yourself and you know your position and I'm going to stand my ground. I've been through a lot of BS, di ba? To know that I'm also not just going to get easily swayed. So there's a lot of that. There's a lot of the inner confidence also that comes with being at this age. We're also unapologetic, I think, about our mission. We're not going to say, oh, you know, sorry ha for all of these things. No. And you can take it or leave it. And we also know that there are people who will not be attracted to our way of doing business. There will be companies who will never become our clients. And it's okay. We have also made peace with the fact that we're not here to please everybody. But when you're younger, you would still have that people pleasing, I'm going to bend over backwards type of mentality. Na I'll take any client because it's money, client is king, etc. There's a space to ensure that clients are happy, but we also know enough that we also know our priorities. We will take care of ourselves. We will take care of our team when we have the team. And that inner knowledge comes also from all of these years of experience and that maturity that goes with it.
I relate so much on just being middle-aged and knowing that if I were put into a leadership position sooner, I probably would have messed everything up. Because there is something that does come with being a little older and being a little more settled with yourself. But also, I do feel that imposter syndrome all the time. Like every day. And I talk to people about it all the time also. And I guess before I go to my next question, what do you do with this imposter syndrome? How do you handle it?
During the pandemic, during the quarantine, there was the luxury for me especially to really get to know myself really, really well. So one is I've really worked on that imposter syndrome by identifying what I liked about myself and then what I could offer. I'm very, very strongly opinioned about crafting the story you tell yourself. It's so important you start with that because that's the story you tell other people. So I did a lot of inner work and hopefully it really meant that this year I had to struggle less with imposter syndrome because for me, it's not about proving myself anymore. It was about now proving that I can achieve what I set out to do. But it took a lot of inner work, thinking, reflecting, journaling, one second, curating the voices around me. So it's a lot of trimming of relationships, activities, media, everything. So what is in your head, imposter syndrome's in your head. So you got to take care of it, what you allow to come in, and then it becomes easier. And then finding your people, your safe space that allows you to be imperfect, fearful, all of that. So you can go back into the world fueled and ready to start again.
You know, Candace has done a much, much, much better job at it than me. And I admit, when that kicks in, I still have reflexes, for example, and she knows this. Oh, I'm going to take a course. I'm going to study this because I think I need to know it. Or I need to get that certificate to know that I know it. Alam mo yon, that weird feeling that you know something, but you feel that you need the validation. So I've had to...
I'm familiar with the rabbit holes. Yes.
Right? Yeah. And it takes a lot of conscious, again, reframing and work to start weeding that reflex behavior out, because I can be very impulsive or compulsive when it comes to that. The second, in relation to what Candace said about curating the voices in your head, for me, it's also identifying and building the tribe. So I have different groups. I have different girlfriend groups for different things. So, you know, there are girlfriends when you talk about family stuff and relationships and all that. Thankfully, I have some girlfriend groups where it's about entrepreneurship, building your business, whatever, stuff like that. And I have also a girlfriend group that are, you know, female founders and leaders that are more global. So I also get to see, oh, what are their issues there, right? So what's happening in other parts of the world, or how are we dealing with things differently? So it's been really important to be open to that kind of, I guess, knowledge, and also knowing that, oh, you know, we're facing different versions of similar problems. So it makes things less overwhelming. But I think one big thing that I'm still working on now is going back to my arsenal. I said, yeah, I'm building up an arsenal. So it's going back now, hey, I built up this arsenal, right? So I may not be the expert at something, but when I put my arsenal together, look at what I can come up with, or look at the additional value I can bring into something because of this arsenal. So it's reminding myself that there are things I can contribute, and I will always come in with a different perspective. And actually, many times I'm brought into a space because of that different perspective. So I have to honor that, and I have to resist the urge to try to fit in, because that's not why people come to me. I'm really often meant to be the nice rabble-rouser, right? Or the person who will dissent.
I love the idea.
But dissent nicely and try to steer things, you know, towards a different direction. And I have to be at peace with that.
I like understanding where you are. And both of you talked about building the right voices in your head and around you. And I wanted to wind down with a few questions. First one is, one of the most impressive things is your ability to grow a community. And I think, obviously, one, your mission is part of it. Like, the reason that you exist is something that is so important and it's so needed that people are coalescing around it. But obviously, you're also making an effort. So can you share, like, how you have been intentionally reaching out, building communities, finding compatriots? Like, what's that look like for you?
The first was just accidental. So just a short history. When Nina and I reconnected last year, we said, the short version eventually led to, let's put up a podcast. It's going to be easy. That was the plan. Then we had all these papers about on community and all of that. Eventually, we caught up in person for real in January for our birthdays and realized that everything that we were talking about with the podcast and the community was really a business plan. And that's how Measurable Impact came to be. But we were still nameless. We were still, we just agreed that we were going to do women in inclusion and leadership. Very, very quickly between that day and I would say 3 weeks, we were, tama, diba?
Yeah.
We were looped in to co-host a women's power brunch with Asian American investors, and then co-hosted it with a venture capitalist firm here, where we put together, all three of us, about 30-something powerful women in the room. And I think that was really the spark that validated for us. One, we needed to be in the space. Second, by the end of that day, and everyone was asking, what now?
Mm-hmm.
No one else was rising up to say, okay, we'll keep this going. So we said it. We stood up and we said, okay, we'll figure out a way to put this together. And it became part of our core that community was going to be what would drive Imaginable Impact forward. So it wasn't a strategy. It was really the nature of who we were. It was our genesis to start in community. Couple that with years and decades of relationship building, already knowing these conversations in more informal ways, we started building community slowly through personal contacts. So our branding started as personal branding. We put our personal relationships out there. Imaginable Impact started as a personal thing to us as much as it was a business. And I think people responded to that authenticity. Like, we weren't there to make, because there's an opportunity, Tara, let's do it, let's build a business around it. But really, no, there's this gap. How can we solve it? And then we listened. We spent 6 months listening to people.
Yep.
Just listening, calls, coffees, more brunches, attending events and listening more. So it wasn't like, come on, let's build a community of 300 people by this date. It wasn't that. Our goal was let's listen and then let's respond. And I think that's what happened. So we made sure that we were always coming across as supporters and champions of these women and not out there to make a buck off them, even if we were building a business. So finding that balance, we put our own personal relationships and personal stories in the middle of community building, which I don't know if that is good business or just good intuition, but it got us this far.
Yeah, no, that's great. I'm also glad that you started as a podcast idea, but you have found out what you actually should be.
We'd love to host another podcast, but you know, there's only two of us trying to build another program. It's still there. It's live.
Yeah,
it's there. Yeah, we'd love to have a producer though next time we know better.
But I mean, the impact that you have made as an offshoot of that initial idea is, again, it's very impressive. My last question here, because we are all creatives who have found ourselves running businesses, and I know it doesn't feel like a normal progression often. What kind of advice can you give creatives who have doubts about being entrepreneurial or going into this yucky business thing?
The big jump really is making peace with how you think about money, profit, and revenue. It's so critical that this is something that you work through, because people put weird judgments on money, morality judgments, setting out stories, all these things, they're all illusions. So whether you're a creative or whatever kind of field you're in, you have to think of money as a tool, right? It's a metric, a tool, a resource, an energy exchange, all these things. You have to really watch how you talk about business. That's, you become your own obstacle. I think that's what happens, creative especially. It's yucky. It's embarrassing to put myself in the spotlight. It's so cringy to talk about myself. But that's not what business is. Business is about your community and your target market. So if you know why you exist as a business, it is going to be never about you. And that's the shift that can change. And money is just the thing that comes part of that equation. Mm-hmm. Once you break through that, once I broke through that, it was so amazing. It's not an issue for me. Now it becomes a value exchange. What do I bring to the table so that I can be a better founder, entrepreneur, solution provider to the people that I'm working with? And that includes talking about a lot of numbers all the time. That's just another language.
Yeah, I love that, what Candace said, no? And I'll harp on two things. So one is value. So imagine as a creative, we're always trying to find what's my special place in the world, diba? Ano yung bagong ambag ko dito? How can I be in a space and contribute and not just take up space, right? So we all want to do something meaningful. And like Candace pointed out, money is a representation of the value that you give. Of course, it isn't the only measure of value. We know that. But when you start to shift into what's the value that I can create here, or what new value can I create and bring out into the world? I was, for example, somebody who has always enjoyed the act of creating something out of nothing. So imagine that as a creative, to be able to bring something to life and have other people pay for it. That's so awesome. Diba yung, hey, I did that. I made this happen. And people saw enough value in it. They believed in it. They were willing to part precious pesos or dollars, right, to be a part of it. So, yeah, the value conversation is, I think, where we should focus on. And the second is, you know, money as an enabler. When I started out and built my first venture, it was because I had to put my brother through high school. It was that. And money became the representative of what else can I do for my family? What else can I provide? And then eventually it's, you know, what kind of life do I want to live? I'm the type of person who votes with my wallet. So I will spend extra on social enterprises and social impact, you know, products. And I told myself, I have to be rich because I need to be able to afford all of these products. Diba? If I want to support the artisans and if I want to support my favorite social enterprises, I can't do it while being poor. So in a way, money for me became a way to support other things I believe in. So again, it's reframing the conversation about money, but also seeing that look at all the wonderful things that can happen when you have the resources. You know, a podcast won't happen without money. Again, an advocacy, Candace mentioned this earlier, even advocacies need money. Nonprofits need funding. Everybody needs money to fuel. So what are you going to use the money for? And then make peace with the fact that it is a tool that you will use to get to, you know, a bigger vision and fulfill the bigger mission you've set out to do.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's thinking about what you do with money and what you do with capital, mm-hmm. and what it opens up and what it enables.
Yeah.
I have one question to round this out, finish it off. And I throw the question to you. What is a question you wish I asked? What is the thing that you wish you could talk about that I failed to ask you about?
This is where your editor has to give us time.
Okay, that's a good question. I think I'd love to talk about the perspective, or, you know, I'd love to be asked why or how things are shifting, you know, in the conversation. It's no longer men versus women. You know, what are we seeing that makes us believe that, it is possible to have men as allies, that it's no longer a competition, and that we can actually coexist in a more collaborative world.
That's one. I think I would love to have a chance to speak about what it takes for a woman entrepreneur to be able to work.
Oh my God.
And when I say that, it support system, the right relationships at home, domestic work, emotional work, mental load, all these things. This is something that automatically comes out when you gather women. It's not something a man would out of the blue ask. It's something we have to also on our own share, because as I said, it's not something that you're probably thinking about. But it is our reality. So when we are in a group of women, whether it's 3 women, 30 women, this topic will always come up. What it takes for you to just live a day. What does your calendar? What does my calendar look like? Oh my God, you should look at my calendar and how it's balancing the work days. I live by my Google calendar. That's the only way I know what I can do in a day and in a week. Because I don't give up my other roles because I want to succeed with imaginable impact. But what the cost, what support, what balancing act is there, if there's any balance at all?
Yeah, thank you guys. I think these are really important conversations, especially, I mean, the fact that we overlook a lot of the labor that
yep.
women do as part of the expected gender roles.
Mm-hmm.
And how that disadvantages women in traditional workplaces. So feeling ko ang dami nating pwedeng pag-usapan pa, but I don't want to take too much of your time. So I want to thank you guys for coming onto the show.
Thank you.
For sharing all of this. And is there any way that people can connect with you so that they can sort of support the efforts and become either part of the movement or allies?
Yeah, so we do have a website. We can start there, imaginableimpact.com. And we try to be active on social media. Imaginable Impact is on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. Personally, Nina and I are on all platforms, right?
Yeah.
So we do encourage people to reach out to us personally. I do respond to my DMs. I'm happy to look at your stories and see what that looks like. So social media is still a really good way. And then we do announce when we have community events coming up.
Yeah, and you know, stay tuned. There's a lot happening for Founder in 2024, and we're super excited about it.
I have three thoughts to take away from this episode. The first is, through talking with Candice and Nina, I was forced to think about the world that is built around us and how impactful that is, especially on gender and gender disparities. As a man who's trying to be an ally, it's always something that I need to keep thinking about. The second, obviously big point is that we need to build inclusive spaces. Like, it is on us to be mindful about how we're creating conversations, companies, workplaces, interactions, so that we are inclusive of as many people and as many kinds of people as possible. And the last is their advice on thinking about money. Because as a creative, I also thought that money was evil and we shouldn't have that much of it. But the way that they frame it, where money is a tool that allows us to accomplish things, is an important way to approach entrepreneurship and impact. You can't make impact if you don't have the money to operate your business. So these were some really great things to unlock. Thanks to Candice and to Nina for coming onto the show. And thanks to you listeners for coming and hanging out. And thanks to the Puma Podcast team that makes this show possible. Producer Geraldine Pascual, audio editor Mark Casillan, and the rest of the Puma Podcast crew. I've been your host, Carl Javier, and you've been listening to A Better Normal. If you want to keep the conversation going, you can follow Puma Podcast on all the socials and follow me on IG. It's at Carl Javier, Carl with a C. If you liked this episode, please do me and at least one of your friends a favor. Tell a friend about this episode and this podcast so we can build a community of people making a better normal.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.